Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Engadget podcast. I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Low, and my usual co-host, Devendra, is still out. So today I have the absolute pleasure of having senior writer Sam Rutherford, who's making a face right now as if he doesn't believe me when I say this. Sam is joining me as guest co-host. Hey, Sam.
Hey, how you doing? I heard a little playful joking in there, okay? I get it. I understand.
It's not a joke. I actually appreciate when you're here. Today,
of course,
we're here to talk about.
Glad to be here.
I know. Second episode in a row that we're talking about foldables, and that's, I think, because it is full boy summer, flip boy summer, whatever you call it. And Sam this week published his review of the Pixel Fold on Engadget.com. We also have a special guest to talk about that joining us later in this episode. And then we have plenty of other news, as usual, to dig through. As always, so if you're enjoying the show, please make sure you subscribe on your podcast platform of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes or anywhere else you can leave, I guess, podcast reviews, you know, let people find out about us. And if you have time, Thursday mornings at about 10:30 a.m. Eastern, we do a live stream of the recording of this podcast. It's usually a fun time. We talk to you directly. We answer questions, say hello to our growing and friendly, vibey community of audience members. It's really a good time. Come hang out then. So today, our main topic is the Pixel Fold review, but also the state of foldables, now that I think we've had an opportunity to review a few non-Samsung foldables here in the US. And joining us, making his Engadget podcast debut, and I'm saying this again, if you've been on the live stream, you've seen me hype this up already, but like, stepping into the ring, over in the eastern corner, all the way in Brooklyn, Mr. Julian Chokatsu, the senior commerce editor at Wired. Hey, it's Julian.
Hey, thank you for having me on the show.
Dang, I give you such a hype, like, entrance.
Yeah, what an intro. Like,
I'm sorry. I'm a very low-key, quiet person, so I appreciate it, though. It was very good.
I know. Full disclosure for everyone that's listening, Julian Chokatsu's brother, Joel Chokatsu, is also an Engadget team member. Joel Chokatsu works for us as a video producer. So just, like, want to disclaim that right there. But we have known Julian for years. Me, Sam, Julian, and former Engadgeter / persona non grata, Chris Velasco, we're a group of friends. We've known each other over the years from the industry. So while Julian may just be making his first appearance on the podcast, he's been there in our hearts the whole time. So, you know, and the benefit of having friends like this is when you review a product like the Pixel Fold, you're all digging into it together. I want to talk about first Sam's review, because of course we start with Engadget's review. Why would we start with Wired's? Sam, tell me what your overall thought about the Pixel Fold is.
Sure. I really like the design. I think, you know, I'm going to do the whole ESPN company man thing. I want to get the little noise, ESPN noise, in the background. So yeah. I got a chance to interview some of the product managers for the Pixel Fold ahead of the review. And so I was able to get, like, you know, a little bit more of a deeper insight on what went into really making the whole Pixel Fold work and why, you know, it's shaped differently than the Galaxy Z Fold. So, you know, if you're interested in that, go check that out on the site. But I think it really comes down to the hinge, the placement, and that aspect ratio of the screen, because it makes such a huge difference. You know, by moving the hinges to, like, the very edge of the device, you know, they were able to create something that folds completely flat. There is a crease, but it's not really that noticeable. I don't know, you know, Julian, I don't know how you feel. Like, did the crease bother you?
No, creases, I feel like, are one of those things very much like the notch, where a lot of people talked about it and most people probably didn't really care that much.
Right.
Like, you know, it's there.
Yeah, totally. Like, who's complaining about the notch on the iPhone, like, 3 years, 4 years in? Like, no one's saying anything.
Right. And I mean, right, you know, once you're using an app, it just kind of disappears. So, creases haven't really bothered me that much. But, you know, it's the shape of the fold that really just sealed the deal for me in terms of, like, you know, usability. And I guess I didn't really understand that until I started using the fold, because, you know, with the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold 4, like, that shape is all I knew in terms of the book-like fold form factor. And when they shrank it on the fold, the Pixel Fold, I should say, there's too many folds. It just makes it so much easier to reach with your hands. The apps generally just look way nicer because there's way more width. And so everything looks like it's not scrunched up like it is on the Samsung Fold. So I don't know, that was like the main thing that just set it apart and was like, okay, I could use this as my main phone.
So yeah. You don't mean shrank it on the Pixel Fold. You mean that the Samsung one is the shrunken one, right? I just want to make sure.
Yeah. I mean, I guess shrunk in different ways. Samsung is like taller, and so the screen looks narrower, and so it's
I
like,
see what you're saying.
You know, compressed but almost.
But the skinniness makes it feel cramped.
Yes. Yeah.
A lot of times. Yeah. And I think you made a good point, and it's like, especially in the US, we don't have a lot of the Oppos or the Xiaomis who are doing foldable phones. We don't have those as like a viable option for us. And so it's finally nice to have something that you can really like do a proper compare contrast that like, hey, now there's options. And I think for me, what it comes down to is I love the design, the aspect ratio of the thing, even just like opening it up and you getting a landscape view. That's so much better for watching videos. And then I love the cameras. Putting a 5x optical zoom, it's like, this is one of my biggest complaints about the Z Fold 4 is that Samsung kind of cut corners on the camera module compared to like the Galaxy S20, S22 Ultra line. And so, you know, I really want that to be, you know, when you're paying $1,800 for a phone, you don't want to feel FOMO about like the capabilities, although that does come into a little bit of a play here because the Pixel Fold has the Tensor G2 chip. And I think that's one of my biggest questions. I don't get into it too much in the review because, like, you know, there's only so many times you can hammer on a phone for being really expensive. But it's like you sort of have to question the timing because I think everybody is just like, Google hasn't said it officially, but everyone's kind of expecting there'd be a Tensor G3 chip this year. And so it's like, why didn't the Pixel Fold come out in the fall when at least, hey, even if you did everything else the same, but you had a new chip, I think people would just feel a little bit better about that pricing, which is still, you know, pretty high.
I have a question, and I don't know if I'm jumping the gun here, but like, do you think you, Sam, who bought his own Galaxy Z Fold 4, are you about to give it all up for the Pixel Fold? Is like, are you about to switch? Is it better? Is the Pixel Fold better?
So, I mean, if you're going to like force me to rank it, I think it's like a 1A, 1B situation here where like, I think both phones definitely have their thing. Although, definitely do not buy a Z Fold now. You know, Sam, there's a Samsung Unpacked coming up. Just wait to see what, you know, what they announced there. But I mean, it's kind of weird. In like an ideal world, I would like the design of the Pixel Fold and its cameras, but I want better performance and a few more of those like nice Samsung touches. I think the fingerprint sensor on the Z Fold 4 is just like, it doesn't stick out and it's a little bit easier to use personally. And so like, there's some other design aspects that I still appreciate about the Z Fold line, but it's like the perfect foldable for me is a mix of those two phones. Yeah.
Julian, do you main a foldable? I don't remember.
No.
You main a Pixel though, right?
I main a Pixel. I don't main a foldable. When after using the Pixel Fold, I was like, okay, maybe I'll main this at least for a good length of time. Because I think the key thing is the front screen is, you know, in my review, I was talking about how before, you know, for the amount of time that you're going to be using a foldable device, you're going to be spending a lot of time on that front screen because, you know, whenever you're walking around just using the phone, you're not going to have time to really open it up and use it. And with the Samsung foldable, I never felt like I was really all that comfortable using the front screen like permanently all the time because it was so narrow. But that was not the case at all with the Pixel Fold. Like, it is almost like a normal Android phone screen, and it's relatively thin, at least a little thinner than the Samsung, I think, and it didn't feel too cumbersome to use in that state. And so I think that's what sort of made it like, okay, I actually can use this thing for a long period of time and not feel annoyed by it, and then getting the benefit of opening it up and super easy multitasking with split screen and such. That just like, all right, well, this is like a perfect phone in my eyes in some ways of just like, I can do more with it. It adds some functionality. I mean, of course, there's a lot of, you know, problems in terms of durability. We don't know really how it'll last over time since it's Google's first entry and it took Samsung several years to perfect that. So I'm sure I'm just waiting for something to happen that it'll just suddenly die on me. So, but who knows?
I think that for me, that's like the biggest like driving force of like why I would like want to switch to a Pixel Fold, because it's like, I've had, you know, I do my yearly like long-term durability report on the Z Fold series, So I wanted to see how Google is. I really want to use that phone for like a year straight to like see how it holds up, because I don't use cases or anything. So like between, you know, that built-in screen protector, which is similar, like, you know, to what Samsung does, you know, see if that bubbles up or starts peeling away after 6 to 8 months, like I've experienced on previous Samsungs.
Yeah, my brain is going in a million directions right now, but you're one of the directions is this. You mentioned, I think, in a previous conversation, or actually Mr. Mobile in our last episode brought this up, which is, and it is a very good point that applies here too. With the Pixel Fold, because durability remains a concern with all foldable phones, whether it's the Moto Razr Plus or any of Samsung's or the Pixel Fold, one advantage that Samsung has with it being the established name in the space here in the US is that when something breaks, it might be a little bit easier to find parts to replace it than, say, a Moto Razr Plus or a Pixel Fold. So we also saw this week that I fixed it will help Pixel Fold owners repair hardware issues if anything happens. Sam, I know this isn't something that you can do because you like haven't broken the Pixel Fold, hopefully, but you had experience getting your Z Fold 4 fixed before, like a or like a Z Fold 3, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But a non-standard phone. Do you think you'll run into similar issues like that? And Julian, have you like thought about what the process is, or have you like done any research to see what the process would be like if you broke the Pixel Fold and how to get it fixed? Let us start, Julian.
I mean, I haven't. I know of like the iFixit plan, and you know, historically with some of these manufacturers, suddenly, you know, after people started talking more about repair laws, bringing opportunities for people to try and fix their own devices. I think it's going to be a little complicated with, I mean, you know, Google has a history of just generally not having the best aftercare service, I'd say, or like it's at least not anywhere near as polished as something like a mega company that sells millions and millions of products like Samsung and Apple. But I think, you know, it's kind of like baby steps and a slow learn, like, you know, they're going to gradually build up and hopefully it'll get better over time. But with any new product, especially, I feel like you're going to not be in an amazing place if you break your Pixel Fold immediately. So maybe just baby that thing for a couple months at the very least.
Or don't buy it.
Don't buy it. You could always buy it next year, or maybe just wait for the Pixel Fold 2, because it is a first gen device.
Sam, you were saying.
So it's like interesting because like, obviously, Google doesn't have the same reach as Apple with like having, you know, Apple has stores everywhere, and there's only two Google retail stores, and they're both of them are in New York City. So it's like, you know, you're not, you know, you have to depend on that partnership with like, you know, iFixit, or, you know, Samsung partners with uBreak iFix and stuff like that. And so, you know, it's interesting. That's definitely one of the trials and tribulations of like owning a foldable phone. It's like you always have that in the back of the mind. It's like, if something goes wrong, it could be a real pain in the ass to fix it. And so, yeah, that's definitely unfortunate.
Well, so it makes it very clear to me why Google went with the Fold format for its debut foldable as opposed to a flip. Because these sorts of early issues, to be clear, the iFixit hardware repair program for the Google Pixel Fold is a self-repair program, by the way. You're not like taking it to a store and they're going to do everything for you. It's still like a self-repair thing, part of these sorts of regulations. So anyone that is going to do that is someone with some technical know-how, hopefully, or is comfortable at least confronting that situation. And that's more of the sort of target audience for a device like the Fold, as opposed to, and Dude Named Charlie in our chat brought up this point earlier, that the flip style folding phone may be a bit more popular with the mainstream audience in future. Like this Fold style thing may always have appeal only to real enthusiasts, or like, again, at the price point, Sam, I want to bring back that point you brought up, that like $1,800 for a device that you only use as a tablet, maybe, I don't know, 30% of the time, it's a lot. It's not going to really branch out to the mainstream audience. Julian, I think you also reviewed the Moto Razr Plus, correct?
Yes.
So do you sense a theme here? Because after I looked at like last week's episode and this week's episode, the theme that I'm seeing is that like, hey, larger external displays, man, like that's that helps, right? And it helps not only in terms of using the phone when it's closed and minimizing that need to open up the phone, but also with battery life. Did you see like in general, what was the battery life experience on the Pixel Fold for you, Julian?
I mean, it wasn't anything crazy remarkable. It was, you know, sufficient, I'd say. It for my purposes, it, you know, lasted the full day and a little bit more usually. Definitely no battery anxiety or anything like that, especially compared to like a flip phone or flip folding phone. I think those typically have much smaller batteries, so they're a little lackluster. But I mean, I've never had issues with battery life, even on something like the Z Fold 4. So I think that the larger style ones definitely have that benefit of just having the larger size.
Sam?
Yeah. And I was going to say, it's interesting because Julian kind of mentioned this before, but like, because the outside screen on the Pixel Fold is so much bigger, you actually don't, I find that I don't open it as much or flip back and forth as I do on the Z Fold, because I can just do a lot more on that outside screen. And I definitely think that helps to preserve a little bit of that battery life. But it's also kind of nice because it really, like, hey, for most stuff, the outside screen is fine. But like, you feel like opening the Fold is like more of an occasion on the Pixel, just because it's like, hey, I'm going to open it because I want to watch a movie and I want a bigger screen. Or, hey, I want to open it because I want to do multitasking. And then I open it up, I don't have to rotate it because it already has that landscape mode, which is like better for a side-by-side multitasking view anyways. And so it's like, it really plays into that, like, hey, you know, there's some battery savings efficiencies because of that, but it also just, you know, changes the kind of usability and the way you use the phone. And then you're also talking about how, you know, Google didn't want to do a flip style phone first. And I think that is also kind of plays into the Google strategy, because, you know, we've seen like Android 12L, it's like, you know, kind of like those features are trickling onto devices now. And so I don't think it's it's not a big surprise. It's like, hey, the Pixel Fold and the Pixel Tablet came out in the same month because, hey, this is part of Google's push to really support big screen devices more than they have in the past. And so I think this is part of it. And then, you know, who knows if we'll get a Pixel Flip. I'm not opposed to it, but I actually, you know, I'm not sure it's as important for Google as a like device manufacturer to make a flip style foldable.
You know, I would really like to see. Oh, sorry.
I just quick point that I would love a Pixel Flip, but go on, Julian.
I mean, I would like a Pixel Flip, and I think that would do really well, especially with like, you know, what the Pixel's known for, a slightly more affordable price. Especially with like a flip folding phone with a good camera, because the Razer's cameras are, you know, cameras. I just think that would be very interesting and a surefire win almost. But at the same time, you know, Google is constantly talking about how smartphone consumption in terms of like people sitting and using their phones are increasing, but people aren't buying as many phones as they used to or upgrading as often. And I think people are spending more times on their phone and they probably want to use that on a more comfortable, larger screen. And something like a flip might just not be that priority right now, where, you know, it's still going to be a kind of a normal, smaller screen than a fold might be. So, or like a tablet might be. So I think that's sort of what they're trying to also play on and get more people to just enjoy the screen that they're using, which is going to be larger.
Speaking of both the tablet and the Pixel Fold, Sam, you brought up the point about multitasking when you want it. What's that multitasking experience like? For me, I think they haven't ironed out all the kinks, but I think, you know, you know the Android 12L / Android L interface a little better than I do. Is it any good? I mean, like, would you spend a lot of time on it?
Yeah, I mean, I think the one thing that like Google is missing is like the ability to like create app pairs where you can just instantly launch two apps side by side. But for the standard multitasking process, it's pretty straightforward. There's like a kind of hidden taskbar that like appears if you just do like a quick swipe up from the bottom. It's not quite like the full swipe up and hold that you would do for like to get see recent apps. So you do a quick swipe up, you get a little taskbar, and then you can have, you know, it's basically what your home row is on the outside. But you kind of pick that, you flip it up, and then you can pick, you know, hey, I can drag an icon up to the left or the right, and you'd launch right into multitasking mode, and then the taskbar disappears. So you're just, you know, there's nothing in the way. And I think it's a pretty straightforward thing. I do think you do have a point about like this whole idea of multitasking on a phone is still relatively new in the grand scheme of things. Like, you know, it didn't really become an issue or a thought process until the Z Fold came about. And so, you know, you see Google kind of doing their own approach to the taskbar versus Samsung, which is like more of a kind of desktop style taskbar on the Z Fold. And so there's a little bit of like interesting approach. And I think both of them work. And I don't really think that is I don't really have an issue with either of those. I think the bigger issue is having apps that they're not really changing the way multitasking works. So you really have to you're beholden on the developers to add new UIs or tabletop modes or just different sorts of optimizations, adaptive resolutions for foldable devices. And I think because Google is, they make Android, but they also make the Pixel Fold, they were able to use a little of their muscle to get, hey, here, have these first party apps, have, really optimize these for foldables. And then, because the Pixel Fold exists and now there's two big foldables on the market, maybe developers we're getting closer to where I need to start caring more about developing or optimizing my apps for foldable devices.
Yeah. And when an app does support that view, the large screen view, it's amazing. Wow. That's awesome.
And you really appreciate, you appreciate app development more a little bit in terms of I'm dragging and dropping something from Google Photos into WhatsApp and it feels really natural. And you're like, oh man, this is awesome. And then you think, I wish this was how all apps functioned. And then that's not the case. But, hopefully this is Google's trying to get the ball rolling on this. And, we're definitely still in the early adopter stage. So if you're sitting there at home and this sounds too much of an annoyance for me, I get it. Totally.
Here's my thing. I think that I know we all know this. I think that for developers to go to the lengths to update their apps and work on, layout and navigation the way we want them to, there's got to be way more adoption of these types of devices, right?
100%.
So Rob Breesmore in our chat says that they really like their Galaxy Fold, but think that the Pixel Fold is just a little better and that they think it's great to see the technology move forward. And that brings me to the thing I really want to talk about this episode, which is the competition we're seeing for Samsung in this space. We are seeing, despite some quirks, despite some flaws, we have some real challengers, according to your headline, Sam, for Samsung in the US right now. The Pixel Fold is really a strong contender. I think the Razr Plus is a good contender, not necessarily the absolute best. It needs to work on its cameras. But we've got some real competition for Samsung now. So my question for the two of you is, we've got an event coming up. Late July, I think is what the word out there is, in South Korea. Samsung is expected to unveil more foldable phones. Do you think, are we going to see that? What feature sets are we going to see? Are there rumors out yet? Are we going to see larger screens, better cameras? What is Samsung about to do? Julian, go first.
Based on some of the few leaks that I've seen and also the past 4 years of Samsung foldables, I don't think they're really going to do anything drastically different from what they're doing now. I think obviously for the flip, the larger front screen is going to be the main appeal and draw, because as we've seen with the Razr Plus, having a functional front screen that can do way more than just, look at tiny little notification icons, I think that's going to make the flip really more useful every day. And again, it goes back to sort of like the Pixel Fold. By improving that front screen, you're just generally making it, the whole thing, much nicer to use. And so that's going to be, I think, the biggest change. But, for the Fold 5, if I assume that's what it's going to be called, it just seems like it's going to be, a finer, refined device from last year's one, which is going to be fine, but I feel like coming from the Fold, I might be a little disappointed in a way, because
I'm just sort of getting that feeling too, because based on some of the early, and these are rumors, these are definitely not official info, but it seems like the Galaxy Z Fold 5 might have Samsung might get rid of the gap in between the phone when it's closed, which is definitely very nice, and it's something I appreciate on the Pixel Fold, but it doesn't seem like we're getting an aspect ratio or a huge design change, which I think is what I think more people wanted to see. It's something I definitely wanted to see, and I'm not sure we're going to get it this year. And it makes me think about the development cycles, because from talking to the Pixel Fold product managers, obviously this the Pixel Fold was a multi-year, 2, 3, maybe 4 years in development. And obviously some of the early work didn't necessarily make it on the phone, but you're kind of looking at the product cycle and the timing for that. And you're just how long ahead does Samsung need to plan to change the design of the phone? Did they not even realize that there was a different solution to this? Or did they not want to try it because of the expense of having to retool and all that stuff like that? And so because, you know, Google didn't have any of those like previous conceptions, they were able to do something different. I think that is like what you really want from the competition, because now it's putting more pressure on Samsung to really innovate and and do that in the future. That said, like, because the Pixel Fold just came out, I don't think that pressure, we're going to see those changes until maybe next year.
Next year. I think it sounds like people want that gap to go away. That rumor seems to be some like of a feature that might be a popular one. But other than that, it does sound like the Fold 5 will look very similar to the Fold 4. And Mark Dell in our chat says Fold 4 was already so much like the Fold 3. And I mean, again, it sounds like Samsung is about to, you know, coast or maybe rest on its
right. They might be squandering their lead, which is like, I think the really disappointing thing is because they've had, you know, four generations, you feel like they would have a little bit more leeway to like really push it and just like dominate that category. And they haven't really cemented themselves in that way yet.
And it's the,
it's weird.
One of the things I wanted to add was like the cameras also, like, you know, I feel like the S23 Ultra cameras are actually pretty good, but then you use the Fold 4 cameras and you're like, you know, the, like, especially comparing
it's serviceable,
Pixel Fold,
but not what you want.
Right. Like comparing all of my photos to the Pixel Fold camera, it was just night and day. And like, you know, it's still fine, but the Pixel Fold is, you know, that's a good camera.
And it's weird because normally Samsung is like the company known for hardware. Like they were the one doing like 10x optical zooms and stuff like that. And so you kind of like expect that they, you know, really have an across the board like domination in terms of just like the hardware. And that's not necessarily the case, which is sort of an interesting situation.
So when we're talking about competition for Samsung, and it's not just Moto and Google right now. We've got a lot of Chinese companies in the past, but now we're hearing also OnePlus is working on its first foldable. Sam, you're excited about this?
Yeah, you're just kind of like circling back on what Julian said. It's like, it's really, I feel like phones are like getting fun again after like a little bit of time of like, you know, a little sameness. And so obviously we have, you know, Razer has a long overdue, I mean, Moto has a long overdue update for the Razer. And there's still that regular Razer that's coming out later this fall.
Yeah.
We have the Google Pixel Fold. And now there are rumors that OnePlus is going to debut its first foldable phone sometime later this year with a 2K screen. Now, the, you know, 2K screen is not, you know, a feature to get super excited about, but just like having more competition is like really awesome. And, you know, OnePlus, you know, is, do you think there is any room to like make it a little bit cheaper? I hope it does. Maybe even just down to $1,500 would be like a pretty big step in terms of like, you know, who can buy a foldable phone. So I'm just really excited to see more foldables. And, you know, 2023 is certainly suddenly turning into a banner year for foldable phones.
Julian, do you know about this rumor? Is this something that excites you?
Yeah, I mean, I saw the leaked. I mean, it, you know, it looks pretty good. It kind of similar to the Fold 4 in some ways. I think my thing is that, like, you know, we complain about phones being the same, and then when the foldables come out, foldables start looking the same. Like, this is an area of opportunity where you can really do what you want and introduce new styles and concepts and shapes and sizes. And I feel like the worry is, you know, people are just going to copy what other people are doing and stick with something. Like, the reason why I think the Pixel Fold kind of works differently is because it does introduce a new size and shape that makes it more genuinely easier to use. But if this looks like almost two phones, the OnePlus looks almost like two phones stuck together, you know, it's very similar to a Samsung, which, but maybe a little better to use. I don't know. But I do hope that they actually utilize the opportunity that they have to like actually specialize their devices a bit more.
You remember 3 or 4 years ago when the big debate was between the Samsung Galaxy Z Fold, the original one, and then the Xiaomi. I mean, not the Xiaomi, the Huawei, the Mate Fold. And so like, it's like you have, because you have the inward folding screen or the outward bending screen. And like, I thought that was a really interesting like thought experiment that we were like getting to see play out in the real world. It's like, does which hinge, you know, bending direction works better? And it seems like the whole inward folding screen, like people decided that was the one that won, but I'm not sure that like that's necessarily the case. Or, you know, I would love to see, you know, a new version of outward folding phone just so we could, you know, see what that is like, you know, 2 or 3 years later with better technology.
talking about phones, we forgot. I forgot the Huawei Mate X was a whole thing. And like, I really liked that. I liked the outward bending style. And I can't believe I just now said that, like, the outward bending screen is not going to work because it's going to
break. I remember we were in Mobile World Congress and you were like real jazzed up about that thing.
I was so hype. It looked so good. Everything that we were allowed to look at back then was great. And then they abandoned that form factor, which that's what I think tells me that that probably doesn't work so well in terms of durability. But yeah, this OnePlus phone, we'll keep an eye on it. Again, the it's still like reports, not an official announcement. It does look like its camera hump on the back is it's in line with OnePlus's design language with that circular hump, I guess, if that's the word we use now for it. More camera looking, I guess. But that's the only thing that really seems to distinguish it from the Z Fold style of phone. The shape, format, aspect ratio seems to be the same. So give them competition by doing something different. Don't just give them competition by aping them, I think is our message, right?
100%, yeah. And OnePlus's track record in terms of that has not always been the greatest in terms of like just innovation, because for years, the whole thing was like, oh, we make flagship phones, but cheaper. We'll see. That said, more competition can't hurt. So
in the chat also, our viewers brought up something that I completely forgot. And I think it's funny that we forgot about this. They were like, what about the Duo? The Surface Duo. Do we think?
No. Trillin, thank you for bringing that up. The Pixel Fold is what I wanted the Surface Duo to be all along. Yeah. I said it like a long time ago before I got a chance to try the phone. Now it's one that this is the phone that Microsoft should have made.
Yeah, but they went with that like dual screen format as opposed to one big flexible folding screen, and they had that hinge in there that they just didn't know how to work around. Do we think that format's dead, gone? The dual screen with a hinge in the middle format? Both of you?
I completely forgot that the Duo existed. No, never say never, I'm sure. I mean, you know, I don't mind it existing if they decide to bring another version. I think, you know, that type of different types of styles and designs is always going to be appreciated, whether, you know, they can make it compete on the same level with something like the Fold or Samsung's phones. That, I think, is a different question, because at this point in time, it seems like even Microsoft is maybe slightly given up on that design
slightly.
I don't know what the utility there is for Microsoft, but I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to seeing something new if they can, you know, swing it in certain ways. But
if Microsoft makes a new Surface Duo, they just should put a foldable screen on it, because a lot of the things that they were trying to do is like what the Pixel Fold actually does. And it's like, okay, this is what we're going here. And it's like, but if you look at like some of the original design on the Surface Duo, it's like super thin, folds completely flat. What else does that sound like? And it's, so it's like, I'm not going to say like, never say never, but I think the dual screenness of the Surface Duo is sort of like an unfortunate, just like a concept that didn't bear out. Like, you know, it's like the VHS or beta debate. Like, VHS eventually won out, and it's like, I think the dual screen phone maybe is just like something that, like, because flexible displays exist, is not something we really need.
I think here's the thing that the dual screen format might have been able to do better. And by the way, shout out to KP for being the one that brought up the Surface Duo in the chat. Because it's dual screen, it didn't need an outside screen. Because I was there like, hey, wait, they don't have an outside screen. The reason they don't have an outside screen is you can flip it all the way around and leave it at that in that state, and have a so-called outside screen. Just flexible displays can't do that.
Displays. Although, if you remember the Surface Duo 2, the big problem was that because the Surface Duo had an awful camera.
The bump.
They put a huge camera module on the Surface Duo 2. So if you tried to bend it all the way around to make it, it wouldn't fold flat completely. So it's like they ruined the whole, like, one of the best design premises of the original Surface Duo on the 2. And it's just like, you like went full circle, but too far the other direction.
Yeah. That bump just really like got in the whole way of the Surface Duo 2, which was unfortunate. But finally, I wanted to also... The talk of the developers creating apps and whether, you know, this is the format that will take off got me thinking as well. Do y'all think there is a future where regardless of whether it's the flip style or the fold style, everyone uses a foldable phone as opposed to the candy bar. Is there a future like that? No, Sam's vigorously shaking his head. And
in the near term, in like the next 10 to 15 years, no. There's no need for it, in the same way that, like, you know, not everyone is gonna, like, not everyone uses dual screen monitors at home, right? Like, you, like, I love it. I mean, I'm pretty sure Julian has dual monitors. And so, like, a lot of, like, you know, if you're really, like, invested in having, like, a nice desk or, like, a desktop setup, then that's something you do. But, like, is it required? Absolutely not. It's really for the people who want, like, the fancy power user device. And it's that, like, upgrade option for if you think you want to do that.
That's the fold, right?
Yeah. For foldables. Yeah. I think the traditional, like, glass candy bar will be around for a long, long time.
My dream would be if they could bring the current flagships down to like $500 and then replace the high-end flagships that are $1,000 right now with all the folds and flips. And
I love your optimism.
Yeah, I know. That's never going to happen.
That's a good dream. what do we think the mix will be in the future? Do we think that foldables like the flip or the fold are doomed to be nicher, more like... No, we think it'll come out to like 50-50.
Flip style foldables will continue to grow. I think I'm just throwing out some ballpark numbers, but like you have 20% of the population has like a foldable, like the Pixel Fold or the Z Fold. And then to me, the flip style foldables, those get classified in with like your traditional glass candy bars. It's just a different version of that because it doesn't do anything differently. It's just, you know, they're cuter, they're more stylish, they're more compact. And I think, you know, you can make those flip style foldables, you know, the same price as this, you know, and they pretty much are already the same price as a regular glass candy bar, then that's just like a style play, right? And so I think you're like, you know, 20% on the big flexible foldable phones, and then you have the rest of the 80% split between flip foldables and glass candy bars or whatever.
All right.
Would be nice to get some new shapes and sizes, though. You know, rollable screens, you know, maybe anyone? Scrollable? I don't know.
Take me back to the Nokia, the wild west of Nokia phones that were shaped like all kinds of weird things. The circle phones, the lipstick shaped phones, the ones that look like, I don't know, Jenga blocks.
I mean, that's like the nice thing about folding phones is that you can have almost whatever you want, like whatever the company wants to make. They have that opportunity. And so I think this is why it's kind of an exciting time, because there are potentially companies making weird shapes that are, you know, about to come on the market in the next 2 to 3 years. And obviously durability will always be a concern there, but you know, it's like going back in time to the time where we had weird shapes and sizes and different types of phones that you could recognize immediately instead of just like a standard rectangle.
I love the cycle where it's like, we go through the thing, it's like, oh, phones are boring, and then like 2 years later, like something happens, like, oh, phones are fun again, and then another 2 years ago, phones are boring again, and then like so it's like, you know, I like the ups and downs. I think it's interesting. Yeah, but I agree completely,
and that's why we do what we do. Julian, I just wanted you to know that Buddy 305 Love in the chat says Julian for president.
Oh,
because
wow.
Of your ideas of bringing prices down, so congratulations.
I think I know my talking points.
Your talking points, that makes you a good politician, so president, there you go. I think we talked a lot. We won't know really what else to expect from Samsung until the event itself, Galaxy Unpacked, late July, I think is currently the date that they have shared. So definitely come back to Engadget, or I guess you can casually skim wire.com for coverage of Samsung's next event. Julian, thank you as always for joining us. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much
I
for having
to have
me.
You back soon.
Yeah, thank you. This was fun.
So somewhat related to our talk about the Pixel Fold, this week in other news, we heard that Google is no longer building its own augmented reality glasses. Remember Project, I guess Iris, remember the glasses that would translate like what people were saying? That thing, apparently Google's no longer working on it. And it's chosen to focus on AR software instead, which I am extremely bummed about. I guess chalk one up for the Google graveyard, right, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, I it's sad just because it's like, I think everyone can see where this whole MR like transition is going. first we get the headsets. They're big and clunky and they look weird. And even the Vision Pro, like whatever, it's not the end goal. Like everyone wants either glasses or, you know, contacts if they ever figure that out in a feasible way where you can, you know, you can get directions or you can see text, but it doesn't look like you're wearing a weird thing on your face. So to see that like someone's getting out of the game is a little disheartening. That said, you know, it could be that the strategy is like, you know, Google, you know, what is Google known for best? Software, right? They're going to focus on software and let the hardware people come up with that. And then maybe, you know, they'll jump back in at a later date.
They did announce at I/O that they're working on an Android XR program for Samsung's XR wearable devices. But they didn't share a lot of details. Speaking of the Google graveyard, there are a lot of things in there, including Daydream. Don't forget, Daydream VR was in there. I think things could come out of the graveyard, let's just say. But this augmented reality glasses that we saw 2 IOs ago is now, you know, freshly buried. But I did want to use this opportunity to ask everyone listening or watching or tuning in, send us your favorite Google Graveyard members, the ones you miss the most, the products in there that you either wish would come back or you thought were sent there too early or took too long to even get there. Send us your thoughts, podcast@engadget.com, or leave them on the live chat if you're watching now.
I'm going to chime in with my response on that. I'm still slightly upset about Stadia. I think Google didn't give Stadia the support it needed, and that makes me sad.
Yeah. I do agree with you on that, but I think it's tricky. They did give Stadia a run, though. You know what I mean? Like, I think they did. I don't know if it's a timing thing. Like, Google Glass was definitely like ahead of its time, it felt like. But then like Stadia, they tried and they were like in the zone where Game Pass was happening and like everyone was really hype about cloud gaming and 5G, but then nothing came of Stadia, I feel. So now moving on to Google, in my mind, Google's biggest rival, Apple. This week, Apple was kind of in a move that's very un-Apple-like. It posted the entire first episode of its show, Silo, on Twitter. This is a show that Sam's been telling me to watch for a while, and I've been meaning to watch. It sounds very interesting. I know. What?
Just watch it. Just stop telling me about how I tell you to watch it. Just go watch it.
I mean, it's on Twitter now, I guess. I gotta watch it. This is so funny on so many levels. First of all, it's interesting marketing to be like, we believe in this show so much that we will show you the entire episode on Twitter publicly. No one needs to pay. You can watch it. And then I think they think they will, you know, entice people to pay for a TV Plus subscription to watch the rest of the series. Interesting choice also to use Silo as a show, right? Why not Ted Lasso? Why not, you know, something else? They must believe in their pilot. And this feels like it's pirating, not pirating, but it's like the pirating people are like, whoa, all right. Okay, you just killed us for the first episode, I guess. Sam, what do you think? I remember you had like some comments during this
time. I mean, Silo is a great show, but I think this is like does two things. Number one, it's like, what's the best publicity? Like, you make something freely available and then you get people to talk about it. And that, you know, releasing Silo on Twitter does that 100%. But it almost, to me, this almost feels like the whole, like, remember back when Apple was first getting into like original TV content and people were like, I don't know if Apple can do it. Like, they're a hardware company. Like, do you know, are they going to be able to manage, you know, it's not, making a phone is not the same thing as making a show. Like, there's, you know, it's much more of an emotional process. And I think for them to be doing this is kind of like, hey, Apple TV is like here. It's like, there's a lot of good shows and like, we're so proud of our stuff that like we can tease a great show like Silo like this by making it freely available. And then, hey, if you like it, you're probably going to want to finish it up and maybe you know, pay for an Apple TV subscription.
I also think it's interesting they chose Twitter as the platform. And I think this also speaks a little to Twitter's endurance still in the space. And it's partly because, I mean, you know, why do Twitter? Because Twitter is still where most of the users are. I mean, look at Mastodon, look at Blue Sky. I mean, we wish those things would take off, but the user base is just not anywhere near Twitter's level. And Twitter is so much more shareable, easily accessible. If anyone wants to watch this first episode of Silo, they don't need really a Twitter account, I don't believe, until Elon Musk listens to this and decides to change policy, I guess. But, you know, it's a commentary both on Apple and Twitter at this point. This one story manages to cover two things.
And you were saying before how, like, you know, Apple is Google's biggest competitor. And it's like, oh, there's a probably good reason they didn't put it on YouTube. Because, So, yeah.
That's a good point. I was like, where else would they put it? I guess Vimeo. Vimeo's over here like, bruh.
Hey, don't forget about us. We exist.
Next thing you know, Crunchyroll is like, Ohio.
You just wanted to say Ohio.
I just wanted to say Ohio, gozaimasu. No. Anyway, so that was just really funny to see. This week also in other news, we heard about, and this one you might be interested to learn that I got very confused with this acronym, the SAE. It's creating a standardized version of Tesla's EV charging plug. Sam, you're more of a car person than I am. I don't know if you've been considering buying an EV or a hybrid sort of, but have you heard of the SAE? Do you know what it is?
They're just like a standards body. And so like right now, the big thing is like a lot of, I mean, just today, Polestar announced that they're adopting the NACS charger, which was designed by Tesla. And so basically, you know, we're having sort of a diverging thing in terms of Europe is sticking with the CCS2 charger for their like universal charging standard, whereas a lot of the American companies or, you know, at least in America, everyone is sort of kind of glomming onto the NACS charging adapter, which was designed by Tesla. And so you still want something, you know, for cars that are available in both countries. It'd be nice to have like, you know, a charger that works with everything. And I think that's kind of what they're trying to do with this. But, you know, it only exists because, you know, we're sort of having that diverging choice of standards, charging standards when it comes to like Europe versus North America.
To be clear, when we were talking about this story, I got very confused. I thought SAE, I mixed it up with the UAE and I was like, oh, I guess the Emirates really invested in EV. Like they're very... I'm like, all right. And I've been searching and clicking through links for the last like minute or so. I still can't find what SAE stands for. So if y'all know, you hit me up in the chat. But yeah, I agree. I think this is the EV industry has the potential to kind of go the way the smart home industry did. Although with vehicles, it's a little different from like appliances where there's just so many different types of gadgets you could have in your home. So the fragmentation is not going to be as bad, but I think you're right. Like standardization in different countries is going to help with EV adoption and
yeah. And in general, this is like just a really good step in terms of making EVs less complicated and more approachable because, you know, right now you have to like worry about like, you know, if, like the especially in North America, the Tesla supercharging network is the by far the biggest, you know, EV charging network around. And it's like people right now, you have to think about like, oh, what car do I have? What charger do I have? Are they going to necessarily work together? Whereas, hey, if we can have, you know, one charger, like no one thinks about going to a gas station and be like, oh, is the pump going to work on my car? You know, we're trying to get to that point with EVs. And, you know, it seems like pretty soon in the next couple of years, everything will, at least depending on like, in a specific large region, everything will just be, hey, one charger works with every car. You don't have to think about it. And that's, you know, a really good step towards just general usability.
That's something we're going to have to keep paying attention to as well. Moving on this week, we also had a theme of overall just improvements to parental controls in apps and social networks that our kids, I'm sure, are very into these days. Starting with TikTok, just a small update this week, really, that the family pairing feature that was introduced back in 2020 as a way to let parents be able to link to their kids' accounts and then remotely disable direct messages, setting screen time limits, enable restricted content modes. This week, basically, it combined a feature or two features that would just make it easier for parents to remotely filter out videos from their kids' TikToks with specific words or hashtags. And it's kind of, I think, given everything that's going around about Colleen Ballinger recently, feels thematic. Feels like this is something that like the social networks like TikTok are paying attention to. Facebook also announced that it's adding parental controls tools to Messenger. It will allow parents to see who can message their kids. And this is just like the first set of tools that are coming to Family Center. It will help you see and control how your teenage kids are using Messenger, see how much time they spend on the app, and also their privacy and safety settings. Sam, this couple of news items this week got me thinking we should do a parenting and tech related episode on the podcast. And I would love for you and Dev and other parents from the team to be on there and hash things out, because I think y'all have a lot of great tips for other parents that might be tuning into this show, but also y'all have different philosophies, I think, on
yeah, I mean, my you know, my kid is still young enough where like he doesn't have his own device. Like, you know, he's not even two yet, but he will be soon. So like, I don't, you know, I'm just like kind of putting the whole social media, like how to tackle that with children, I'm putting that conversation in the back of my head and trying to postpone it for another, like, yeah, as many years as I can. But, you know, I think it's obviously very important. I think to me, it's like, you know, it's just really important for parents to teach their kids on an ongoing basis about, like, you know, what the internet is and what social media is and, you know, how you should value these things. Because it's like, you know, you see the big danger is for people to get so absorbed into social media. That's like, that's all they care about. And I think it's nice to have these features in here where you can protect and filter content, but it's like, it's more, you got to take a more holistic approach. I feel like in terms of like, you want to have fun with your devices and that's cool, but like there's more to life than just, you know, having your head stuck in social media all the time. And I think that's not necessarily a thing you can tackle with, you can put all the filters in a world in an app or all the parental controls in an app, and you still won't, you know, you need more than just filters and parental controls to like really teach some children how to like balance their lives both in the digital world and in the real world.
There's definitely like a more active, involved approach I think that parents can do rather than just like, okay, screen time, that's it. But like, you can have conversations while also using the tools available to you in these apps and technology itself. Selena Kyle in our chat already echoed support for that sort of episode. They say that they would love advice for their two boys, which is great. I'm sure during the summer, we'll get to that episode soon.
Yeah, it's just like general stuff, like teaching kids about scammers and, you know, phishing and like what that means and like, you know, why it's important that they consider what data they release online. It's like, you know, there's definitely something there. Yeah.
And catfishing and all of that stuff. My mom had a very militant approach, so it's very different. Next, there was also a little bit this week in news from podcast land, and I am tempted to throw this to Ben to kind of have him tell us why it's important and what happened. So Ben, tell us what's happening.
Okay, so SiriusXM announced that they are shutting down the Stitcher podcast app, which I think is pretty important because Stitcher is one of the main podcast like platforms that people have used for the last, you know, 10 or so years. We're coming up on 10 years since the big podcast renaissance that started with Serial. So SiriusXM bought Stitcher in 2020 from EW Scripps, another, you know, big content company. And now they want to get people onto their SXM app. And so a lot of people love Stitcher.
To be clear, that is SXM, not SNM.
SXM, SiriusXM app. So a lot of people loved Stitcher for a lot of reasons. Stitcher like had a small content arm of its own. It also had a premium tier where you could just pay to get ad-free podcasts and also in some cases like get new episodes earlier than you otherwise would. And with this change to SXM, they're not going to be able to do that. People who already paid for Stitcher Premium are going to get like 6 months of SXM Premium, whatever the paid tier is, but you're still going to need to listen to ads, and that is the way things are going to be for the next, you know, foreseeable future. We'll see if anything changes. This comes after Gimlet, Anchor, and Parcast were subsumed under the Spotify brand. All of this stuff is not so surprising. After Sirius bought Stitcher, you can only imagine that eventually they were just going to become one thing. It was only a matter of time before Spotify like really started bringing the businesses they bought closer to their brand. But it just feels like a significant sea change in the podcast landscape. People would always say, oh, it's the Wild West of podcasting. Seems like there's a lot of consolidation happening now.
So we'll keep paying attention to that. And we'll always have, topic close to Ben's heart and of course to our hearts too as podcast people. One more piece of news this week that we wanted to shout out, the creator of the lithium ion battery passed away this week. And I knew this was worth mentioning when I said that. And Ben went, John Goodenough is it? Like, I was like, oh, okay, this is a name people know. I myself wasn't very aware. Sam, any feelings about John Goodenough?
I mean, the guy was a legend. Like, you know, he not only was he like helped break through like lithium ion batteries, like, you know, he worked on some of the memory improvements on like what eventually became RAM, random access memory. Career is like you could like hopefully, you know, I want to read like a good biography about him someday. But like, yeah, like obviously a big loss. But like this guy was like a really, you know, big name in terms of like a lot of the technology in the last like 50 years.
He was a 100 years old, and that was a good long, and it sounds like a really accomplished life that he led. So pour one out. Rest in peace. Moving on to what we're working on this week. Sam, what are you doing this week?
I am deep in testing the Asus ROG Ally. You know, they're a kind of Steam Deck competitor. Hopefully we'll have something for that next week. I'm trying to do a little bit different, more of a face-off style review. Just because it's like, who, like, you know, if you're thinking about buying a handheld gaming PC, what are the two choices? It's the Steam Deck or the ROG Ally. And so I really want to dive down into that and, you know, try to give people some good advice about what to think about if they're considering getting one of them.
Yeah, I mean, while we're talking about this, can you bring the Ioneo today to the office so I can see it? Thank you.
You can have it. Yeah, I'll just give it to you.
Thank you. Yeah. But you're also, yeah, go on.
Yeah, so yeah, Sherlyn's trying to get on the handheld gaming PC bandwagon, so you gotta lend her some devices. And I'm also working sort of in the background on the Lenovo YogaBook 9i, which is their dual screen thing. I gotta bring that out to some coffee places or cafes to like get people's reactions about like, yo, what is this dual screen nonsense?
I have been working on helping. So we have a new team member. I mentioned before, Malak has joined our team. She's our new health and fitness reporter, and she's very well connected in the science and sort of health side of medicine sort of side of things. And we've been trying to do a bit more rigorous testing on the Dyson Zone that's happening this week. I'm also doing some more reporting in the background for a story I'm very excited to have go up, hopefully by the end of the next month. So stay tuned. We're also doing a bit of rejiggering of the whole reviews program here at Engadget. We want to do, just now that we have a few more people, we want everyone to kind of learn what the Engadget review structure is like. But also with people like Sam on board, we want to like recodify and really make our reviews testing program so much more scientific, just a better program overall. I can't remember. Comprehensive, structured, like the tests are things that you can trust are both realistic and also repeatable. Anyway, there's a lot of thinking that goes into this. I know it looks like we just spit stuff out overnight, but it's a whole process. So hopefully we'll have something really good for y'all in the future. Around Engadget too, everyone on the team, specifically the commerce team and our senior commerce editor, Valentina Palladino, they're hard at work because Amazon Prime Day is coming very soon. It was announced, I think, last week, maybe that Prime Day this year is, 2 days in July. I think July 14th and July either 13th or 15th, one of those. So we'll have plenty of coverage on how to get the best deals, what the best deals are. So stay tuned to Engadget for all of that stuff. Maybe start putting stuff in your cart. Keep an eye out on what you want. Time to get some good deals. Sam, I see you are asking me what my pick might be this week for pop culture recommendations. Okay, so as always, I, you know, wait till the last minute to do this because because I don't sit around enjoying myself. I sit around playing solitaire on the phone. And already last week I said, let's play solitaire, everybody. I can't do that again. This week, though, I think I might have recommended this on this podcast before. But I've been re-listening to a lot of J-Tro music lately. And yes, and then going through some of his old discography and just remembering what bangers his entire early first three albums were. So if you're into Mando pop, Chinese pop at all, which who knows, maybe they're the next thing after K-pop.
That's the first time I've ever heard that term.
Oh, Mando pop is the thing we say in Asia, but I think Chinese C-pop, I don't know, C-rock, I don't know. It's nice. J-Tro, again, when he came on the industry, he really blew a lot of people away. He just like crossed genres like it was nobody's business. He infused modern music with like traditional instrumentation. It was just so good. So if you speak Chinese at all, if you just want to hear how it's pronounced, his albums like Fantasy was his first one. Ye Hui Mei was a tribute to his mom. It's I think his second or third one. His first three albums were just incredible. I'm getting such a kick. And then of course, those of you who don't want to listen to Mandarin or Chinese music, I have a recommendation for you too. The other thing I do with my time now, instead of play solitaire, is the New York Times crossword app. I play Wordle, I play Spelling Bee, I play even Tiles and the traditional crossword. This week, actually, literally yesterday, I found out that the New York Times has added a new game to the app. It's called Letterboxd. It's a lot of fun. It is, as always, a word game, a puzzle-based word game, or a word-based puzzle game. It's basically a square where there's letters on each side, and you have to form words by using letters of the letters can't be from the same side. So you have to jump to a different side each time. Really intriguing, very cool. And then you have to clear all the letters and make sure you cover all sides within 5 moves. Very fun game. If you have the New York Times app, go check it out. Sam, what about you? What should I do other than play solitaire?
Well, I actually definitely want to play. So one of my secret like long-term projects is I want to do a 365-day streak in Wordle. I'm at 145 days right now. My last record was 180 days, and then I went on vacation, and the time change screwed me up. So I'm trying to do that. So I love Spelling Bee in the New York Times app, so I'll have to try that out. But I mean, I want to watch more Marvel Secret Invasion. I think obviously like a lot of comic book fans, like this is like on their radar. I'm not like, you know, spilling any hot news to anybody. And I'm enjoying it more than I thought I would because I hate the evil clone trope in like comic books. It's like one of my least favorite tropes. But I think they're making it work in this. Second episode, they kind of flesh it out in a way that I appreciate. And they have some, you know, some back and forth between Nick Fury and Rhodey in terms of like, you know, how they see their role in the, you know, in protecting the world and all that, which I thought was really interesting.
Well, I can't wait to watch that. I saw a little bit of it and I'm glad to hear that you enjoyed it despite the evil clone trope. But yeah, I think that's about it for this week. Well, that's it for the episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Sam online at
Sam Rutherford on Twitter.
If you want to send me fun word games that I can play for free on the internet, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe still on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. That bum, 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 bum.